a very good Friday, double carryover fans. Yeah, we got a double carryover, and I did not get a chance to do the tweet of the decision on turf, and you need this right away, and I'm actually happy that I did not write up the – I'm going to do it after the show. So we're diving right in here, folks. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our websites, thebic.com, it's Twin Spires Weekend Preview. But before the weekend, we've got opening day at Keeneland. Always exciting. And I'm going to guess, I didn't look this up, but the Friday, right? This is usually college day, isn't it? We'll check on that. Marty McGee is going to join us in 9 minutes. And we'll kick off the coverage. He will be coming to you from the press box. High atop, not that high, but definitely atop the Keeneland building. And we'll get into everything Keeneland in a little bit with Marty. But before we do anything else, here's the decision on the $200,000 carryover. $207,000 after yesterday's craziness. And I got to tell you, I mean, I know I tweeted when I put up my glance and play for the pick six yesterday at Aqueduct. I said, well, off the turf, but the off the turf did not destroy, you know, the bettability and the opportunity to attack that sequence. No, it didn't. To the point where nobody negotiated the sequence. That was a very interesting set of results. And I knew things were in trouble right away. Right away. Even that Massabe, the Horacio De Paz, and I mean De Paz is just, I mean, he's a problem. you got to look three times at every single thing he sends out. And Massabe was maybe a consideration off the turf. Ends up winning, more or less, wire to wire. You know, our Jessica was sparring. Our Jessica got bet down. And I thought Holiday Jazz, the MTO, was the right horse, but it ended up being something of a merry-go-round on the drying track. And so right away, you had a $14 winner, and I thought, all right. Well, then Scotty wins. I'm sorry. Scotty was not on my radar. Greg DePrima with Double D. Dylan Davis comes from off the pace, and I needed that Forest Wood Lane, who at 8-1 was a crazy price. I only wanted to utilize. I tried to go 2-2-2 for the most part, and Forest Wood Lane was a horse that I thought was very eligible to win there in that 14 claimer, and God, 8-1, but just could not get to Scotty. So now a 17-20 winner, and you're thinking, ew, this is getting squirrely. Well, then it squirrelied. By the way, remind me about the squirrel, because the John Wayne Gacy of cats he's at it again. He took the summer off. We have a cat that's the Hillside Strangler. I mean, it's unbelievable. Anyway, things got squirrely after five. Wins in the photo with blinding light, 19-1. And then you knew at that point, with a $1,200 pick three, you said to yourself, well, this could really, okay. This could go awry. And it did. Curlin's Wisdom made sense. That 3-2. Mosienko. I needed Patty H. I thought Patty H. could wire. I wrote that, and Patty H. was in the process of wiring until she wasn't. Mosienko gets her by a head, 6-5 over 9-2. I mean, that's okay. So be it. That gets us to the nightcap, and it was a little surprising that Ableton was uncovered in the pick six. There were, what, four horses that were uncovered out of the seven? And Ableton was one of them. And not only Wired, it was my third choice. This was John Kimmel for the Esslers, homebred of theirs, a twirling candy gelding that is okay. And nobody got claimed in here. My man, Siaka, Addicted to You, ends up being declared a non-starter. And this gets back into that conversation we had the other day about non-starters, because Naira has always been good about that. That is one area. I mean, I know everybody loves to pile on and attack anything associated with the association. But when it comes to, typically when it comes to, they may have missed that one the other day, but generally they're very good with that. And Addicted to You threw his head, and the assistant starter was caught up in it. They declared Addicted to You a non-starter, and boy, to Trevor's credit, he let Addicted to You settle and then made steady progress, but nobody was getting to Ableton. So, you know, Bob's your uncle. How about a $207,748 pick six double carryover today? And so let's set you up for what's happening. The 6th and the 7th remain on the turf. That's starter allowance and the 25 straight claimer. So one race on each course, the 6th and the 7th. The 9th, which is a 30-non-2, 12-horse field, that's off the turf, and so is the 4th. The 4th being a 30-non-2 for boys. The other one is for girls. And so no MTOs in that 4th or in the 9th. However, you do have 12 in the body and 3 AEs. So those fields should stay together. All right? So I'm going to attack this after the we get off the air. All right? And Keeneland, I already wrote up, although I am struggling with that 10th race at Keeneland today, to be honest. All right. Dave Grenig will join us in the third hour at 11. Nick Tamro is on holiday. He's literally on the water. He's on a cruise. So we can't. No Nick today. All right. Casey, reach for Marty, if you would. Let's get Marty McGee in here. While we do that, I'll give you the lay of the land. Marty McGee starts us off. And, of course, with the DRF correspondents, we will touch on each of the assorted divisions that they cover toward Breeders' Cup. So we'll not only get the current opinions about the weekend and their focus, but also some early Breeders' Cup field glances and so forth. Marty McGee starts us off. Brad Free, free as the wind blows, free as the grass grows, because he's Brad Free. And he'll join us after Marty. We'll get into Brad's covering the distaff, and he does the morning line for the Saturday races. David Aragona does the morning line for the prospects on the Friday card, on the Juvie card. Scott Shapiro will be back to look at Saturday action at Keeneland. Marcus Hirsch, top of hour two this morning, and Marcus will do his assorted hijinks, some game plan action, and so forth. Scully, of course, as well. We'll get James's opinions, and another DRF colleague, Ron Gierkink, joins us to talk about Woodbine and the E.P. Taylor. Pretty exciting to have the Queen's Plate winner contesting. And then Dave Grenig is mentioned. Gus is going to visit, Gus Alonso, and I think we'll also have a chance to get, I never got to Seth yesterday, so maybe Seth and I will look a little bit at the pick six, see if he's got some opinions. We'll have scratches by then, and I wouldn't mind getting a Rich Eng visit in as well today. Papo is traveling as well. He's in the air. So no Nick Tamaro, no Papo Morales, but we have Marty McGee live from the press box at Keeneland. Good morning.
Big.
Bert.
What's happening, Big?
How was the drive?
Well, it was in the dark because, you know, we can't afford streetlights here in Kentucky, so aggravating. like you're the old man shaking your fist at the clouds when you complain about it. My God.
I love it. I love it.
I would have stopped and taken a picture of the horrific Paytona Wadi sign. But you know, you pull over on the road in the dark, or you might get slammed into. So yeah, I'll do that another time.
I love it. Marty, let's set up what is, and we're going to do plenty of Breeders' Cup, too, with all the DRF correspondents that are covering divisions. This week, the BC coverage kicked off in the pages of the Daily Racing Form. America's Turf Authority since?
1894. That makes it 128 years, Vic.
Well, you know, we're going to miss Priv for a lot of reasons, but one of the biggest reasons is whenever I would float that for him, you know what his answer was?
No, what was?
Well, since Marty McKee was in short pants.
That's pretty good. God, I miss him already. He's created a gaping hole at our company.
We knew it was going to happen. I mean, obviously, Steve Anderson and Brad Free picking up the West Coast mantle, but on the national basis. And also, you know, one thing that I haven't figured out yet is the Lazy Susan. I do see that Dave Grenig picked up the Classic, which doesn't surprise me. So I guess Dave, the juvenile and the Classic. There's been some movement on, let's talk Breeders' Cup divisions, because your advance piece on the Keeneland meet, Marty, basically, you know, told the A story, which is here's a Keeneland that will lead to the third Breeders' Cup to be run there in Lexington.
Yeah, and there's already physical signs of it being here. I mean, I'm looking at the press box right now, and there's this, right here on the finish line, there's these temporary stands that are in front of the grandstand. It's kind of, I'm not going to say it's a hindrance, but it, you know, it's a necessary thing to house more people in here. I think that the estimated attendance on the two Breeders' Cup day is right around 50,000. Now they're saying that during the meet they're maintaining their COVID, the policy that was instituted during just post-COVID, of about, in quotes, 20,000 people being here. I guess they don't want to paint themselves in the corner if they need more than 20. But anyway, the tickets are sold out for today, tomorrow, and next Saturday, the 15th already. You can get, I think it's pretty, they've manipulated the websites so that you can pay more through resale. But, you know, if you really want to come, you can get here, and it's not that exorbitant. But anyway, yeah, we got, I was out this morning, and there's more people here, it seems like, than normal. This time of year, opening day early and all that, but let's just hope that this kind of weather, Steve, continues, because it's been tremendous here the last two or three weeks in Kentucky. Post-Kentucky Downs, the obligatory rainstorms that canceled and delayed a couple of those cards, but none of that. There's none in the foreseeable forecast, so turf course looks great. We've got 11 stakes this weekend as preps towards the Breeders' Cup, 9 of the 11 being win in your ends. And all systems go here at Keeneland.
Outstanding. Let's touch on a few things, and I should mention, I wasn't sure if this Friday or next Friday was the college scholarship, but it is next Friday, October 14th. Expect the throng of students to fill up the building. Always a festive day. At Keeneland, College Scholarship Day, everybody registers and they give away 10 $2,000 scholarships courtesy of Keeneland and the KTA. So don't miss out, right?
Also, expect a throng of South Carolina fans here today and tomorrow. You know, they played football over at Kroger Field tomorrow night, Kentucky versus South Carolina. And then next week, and I've looked ahead for the whole meet, next week is also a quote-unquote bluegrass doubleheader with Keeneland in the afternoon and then Mississippi State visiting at night. And then those are the only two ball games during the course of the meet. I haven't looked ahead to Breeders' Cup. I don't know what's going on that weekend, so maybe I'm mistaken in terms of that. But I know the next two Saturdays after that, the 22nd and 29th, Kentucky's either idle or away.
Well, All right, so be watching for anybody in that maroonish, that scarlet maroonish Gamecock paraphernalia, regalia.
And then the deep maroon for the Mississippi State Bulldogs.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Well, Marty, before we talk about the big three grade ones on Saturday, let me quickly get your Friday ideas, the Phoenix, the Jessamine, the Alcibiades.
Well, the Jessamine. I want to go to the Jessamine because something happened. I write down my picks on my little program here, and I picked Knock Your Socks Off.
Yeah,
and I see that our new linebacker, who you said will be unavailable today, Nicholas P. Tamaro, made Knock Your Socks Off 30-1 with Flavian Pratt to ride. So I'm thinking, you know, whenever I see I pick a horse 30 on the program, I'm thinking, what did I do wrong? So maybe she will only be maybe half of that. I don't know. It's such a deep race, this Jessamine. I mean, some of these races, like tomorrow, we'll get into tomorrow, but the Breeders' Futurity and the Coolmore Mile, they're unbelievably good. So it's just so welcome. It's so nice to have turf for these races. Let's go with the Knock Your Socks Off, and I'm starting right square in the middle of these three stakes. With
interesting.
Knock Your Socks Off, the 11, 5, 12, blind spot second. Toehead, who got beat a dirty nose at Kentucky Downs by Chop Chop. That'll be my third pick. Going back to the Phoenix, I don't know if you read my advance on that, but, you know, there's an emotional thing in play here for Gary O'Dwyer, the trainer of Sebelius. His dad died about 10 days ago. We buried him on Sunday. Jerry got back here on Tuesday. So, you know, this is his best chance by far ever to have a Breeders' Cup horse. So, you know, you can't be blamed for rooting for number 5 Sebelius. Nonetheless, I did pick Necker Island to come and get what looks like it's going to be a speed duel between Special Reserve and Sebelius. And Necker Island, who misses very few dances around here, could come and get him.
All right, and you mentioned Chop Chop as part of that that storyline with Toehead. There are a number of two-year-old fillies, I think four or five, that are making the move from turf to dirt in this Alcibiades. And interestingly, Mart, I did a little bit of, I just was curious about the pricing in the Jessamine. You know, what kind of horses typically have won that race? Because you took Knock Your Socks Off, who I included, but I picked Sabalenka on the rail, and 10-1 for Whit Beckman was there for Sabalenka's win, and had Whit on the show last week. Sabalenka should save a lot of ground. As it happens, Sabalenka's debut came against Knock Your Socks Off. So I absolutely saw that harmony. Turning to the Alcibiades, fascinatingly, of the last 10 Alcibiades winners, four trainers who have horses in today have won the last eight of the last 10 Alcibiades: Cassie Cox, McPeak, and Motion, who have 5 of these 14. And in fact, Cassie has won this 3 times in the last 10 years. McPeak twice, Cox twice.
Conspicuously absent from that roster of winning trainers is Todd Fletcher, who has never won the Alcibiades. You could have won a bet on that, I'm sure, you know, given how he's won pretty much everything. So that he will be going for his first win with number 10, Kaling. I believe she's one of a number of these fillies trying to go a distance of ground for the first time. I thought this was way wide open. I'm going with the home team, McPeak. Fun and Feisty, who was terrific in the Pocahontas, over a horse that Brad Cox is really high on. Should get a good trip under Rosario. That's number 2, Chop Chop. Brad thinks that she'll make the transitions quite smoothly from turf to dirt. My third horse would be the filly that scratched out of the Frisette for Chad Brown, number 4, Raging Sea. So I'm a 9-2-4 here in the featured Alcibiades today at Keeneland.
Very good. All right. Let's turn to Saturday because it's chock full of interest. And let's actually start with the nightcap with the Grade 1 feature. The former longtime Shadwell Turf Mile, now the Coolmore Turf Mile, $1 million. And a bunch of Grade 1 winners in here. I think, what, four or five Grade 1 winners? And it certainly starts with Santin for Brendan Walsh. And, you know, no reason to think that a return to a mile, at which actually the distance he broke his maiden, and he happens to own a win at a mile at Keeneland, an allowance race after that maiden breaker. Santin, much to me now, and the more I looked at it, Marty, the more Santin feels, you know, like the, not just the horse to beat, but a likely winner.
I mean, I've got him picked, but, you know, he's been so good at Churchill, which is a different course, as we all know, than the one here. So I'm a little hesitant to go out on a limb. I've got Ivar second. You know, until a few days ago, Paulo Lobo, who, by the way, has won this race the last 2 years with Ivar in 2020 and in Love last year. Until a few days ago, he was going to run in Love and not run Ivar, but he switched up, and Love's going to wait for an allowance for which he's eligible next week. And he just told me that Ivar bounced out of the race behind Modern Games at Woodbine in just super shape, that he's really going into this with a lot of confidence. So I've got it. Santin, Ivar, and Mason, one of the two Chad Browns in here. Cool. But I swear, Steve, there's six or eight really logical picks in here. Classic Causeway in Annapolis, two of the top three-year-olds, both trying older for the first time. Set Piece has come flying if it gets too hot up front with, like, Smooth Like Straight, who, of course, is almost always in the money. So if you're playing some super-dupers or tries, you might want to use Smooth Like Straight under as the key, although I tell you there's a lot of pace in here. So
there is a lot of pace.
He's going to need a good ride from Johnny. I guess a Classic Causeway and Smooth Like Straight will be the first to go from the two inside posts, and after that, you know, it's anybody's guess. But you have the 2020 Breeders' Cup Mile winner here, Order of Australia. I understand he's going to go home after this. Whether or not they'll come back to the mile, I'm sure it depends on how he runs. But you got your man Lee Einsiedler with Castle Creed. You got Castle. And you got Some Like It Hot Brown, who was terrific, got a great ride from Jose and went in the race down at Kentucky Downs. So lots of countries heard from here in the 37th running of the Grade 1 Coolmore Turf Mile tomorrow at Keeneland.
Well, and you mentioned most of the principles that I'm interested in, and that Santin for me on top, Casa Creed coming late, and Ivar, I was surprised too when Ivar turned up in here, because I thought I'd heard or read that they were going to bypass. So the fact that, you know, that Paolo wants to run says a lot. A terrific Shadwell, my boy, old habits die hard. The Coolmore Turf Mile. Let's back it up.
If you look it up in the media guide, it's had about seven or eight different names. This is the 37th running. You know, it became the Keeneland, the Breeders' Cup, blah, 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 all this stuff. But, yeah, it was Shadwell for the longest time. Kind of like we all call it the Jim Beam, you know. Hadn't been that for a while.
Well, or the Spiral. Or the Gallery Furniture.
Yeah.
I think Gallery Furniture, just because it's funny.
It had a different name when Kelly Breen won it. You know, before the Jeff Ruby Stakes, STEAKS.
In fact, that reminds me, Marty, don't let you leave without an aside about, I got some people that have been writing to me for dining recommendations in Lexington, and I always say it's really not my dining in Lexington is always pretty pedestrian. I'm a big Ramsay's Diner guy for a meat and three plate, you know, a little meatloaf and mac and cheese. And so
and
I'm not the right guy to ask.
Yeah, and do they have lima beans at Ramsay's?
They've got lima beans. I can do without those. I'll take a little cream corn, or, you know, mashed. I might go with the starch trifecta.
There you go. Haskin used to like to go to Pat's Steakhouse in Louisville just because of the lima beans. But anyway,
go ahead.
He also liked the old tuna salad they used to make in the press box at Churchill because it had relish in it. So,
Whose tuna remember. Doesn't have relish?
Well, I mean, it was particularly good, I guess. So, yeah, he loved the tuna.
I love it. Mark, the Breeders' Futurity here, and this is interesting because it brings horses from, you know, a number of different sort of outposts, including some turf movers like Brendan Walsh with the Good Samaritan Colt Goodhart, thank you. And you got horses. Here's the list. You got horses from Canterbury, the always dangerous Ravelli, Saratoga, a bunch of those, Kentucky Downs, Monmouth with Lost Ark out of the Sapling. How about Baffert sending Newgate in early, the Into Mischief Colt, the one at first asking at Del Mar and was sort of nowhere to be found in the Del Mar Futurity. And, of course, we also have got Churchill participants as well. So they're coming from all points on the compass.
Well, I think one of the reasons it's such a good and deep field, Steve, part of the reason is that they're going to run this same race 4 weeks,
sure.
27 days later, same place, same distance, everything else. So I've got to pick Loggins, the really impressive first out winner for Brad Cox. I've got a 2-12-7, Loggins over Goodhart over Fort. Is it Fort or Forte? I mean,
this has been a matter. It's been a matter of debate because it's supposed to be Fort, but the word is that Rapoli and Viola named him with the idea of Forte. So he has been monikered, spoken word Forte, but it really the word is actually Fort.
Well, do I need to tell Kurt Beck? What do I need to tell Kurt Becker to call it?
Forte, because that's the way the owners want it pronounced.
Okay. All right, Forte. Forte, in my opinion, is vulnerable because although he did win the grade one, the hopeful, it was A, at a shorter distance, and B, over the slop, and he was almost 7-1, which kind of, tells you what kind of how he was regarded going in. So he is a lukewarm morning line favorite, but I think he's extremely beatable. So, again, I'm going to go with Cox, who won this race a couple years ago with the sense of quality on the way up, and, seems like he can do a little wrong these days. Frosted Departure coming out of a almost 10-length allowance win at Churchill. He's got to be given some respect for McPeak. Instant Coffee, the other Cox horse for your man, Al Gold. I mean, there's a lot of horses. You mentioned the Baffert horse, Newgate. He's even got one on the AE's, number 15, Carmel Road, who would really rate consideration if he drew in. Terrific race here. 109th running of the Claiborne Breeders' Futurity tomorrow, Keene.
I very well may end up picking. I'll make this decision later or in the morning. I very well may pick Instant Coffee, who I was able to get a piece of at Saratoga, and the stretch out, the two turns, doesn't feel like it should be an issue. The Bolt Doro, he's out of an Uncle Mo mare, and could not have been more professional in that 15-1 win at the Spa. And in fact, today the horse that I actually picked in that race was Brighter Days Are Coming, that Joe Sharp sends out today for his second start, and seems I wish he wasn't 3-1 today, but other than that, he's appealing and feels like the horse to beat. But Instant Coffee, I think, is the real thing. The horse that is going to be an overlay in here and is going to be overlooked, and especially because he's outposted, how often are we going to get Steve Asmussen at 15, 18, 20-1? He's got the Nyquist Colt in the 14-hole, powerful, and you get the services of Jose Ortiz for a potential boxcar score.
I mean, he's going to have to be the best out there. So
yeah,
that is really a demanding post. You tend to get hung wide on both turns for that, and then if you're having to come from behind, you have the short stretch and everything else. So, I think that price will be deserved, 20-ish on number 14, Powerful.
The other grade one on the card, the First Lady, and this kind of surprisingly, only drew six, and Regal Glory for our late friend, wonderful friend, and incredible gentleman, and incredible contributor to the game, Paul Pompa, and Regal Glory beaten in the four-star day by Casa with his late run, but the horse to beat here.
I know that she's 6-5 on the morning line. I think she might even be a little bit lower because once people start doping this out, they're gonna you know, do the math of Princess Grace and Technical Analysis and Italian are all front runners. I think, though, and I made Technical Analysis my best bet, I think Pratt might have something up his sleeve in terms of working out the right kind of trip. Clearly, if they all go headlong into it, Regal Glory is going to roll past them all. So I think 4-5 or so on Regal Glory. It's a question whether or not you want to take that and believe that it will set up for her. But, you know, again, I'm going to go a little bit outside the box here and go with Technical Analysis. Chad Brown has won this the last 4 years. He's going for his 5th in a row, 6th overall. You know, I documented in my story about it the number of times he's run 1-2-3 in these major races, not only here at Keeneland, but also Saratoga, Belmont, Arlington, Gulfstream. And, you know, it would not be a surprise to anyone if numbers 3, 4, and 5 in the First Lady were the top three finishers tomorrow for Chad.
Well, since we included Jay Privman, the departed Jay Privman, from the pages of the Daily Racing Forum as part of our coverage, I'm going to pull a Privman when we talk about the TCA.
Go ahead.
Ready? Little Tootsie won't lose.
It is a wide open race. You know,
won't lose.
Won't get beat.
Lose.
DGSO. Don't get shut out. So when we really like the horse, it'd be a DGSO.
I got to write that down.
Yeah. I picked Club Car in here, but I could go with about anything. Slammed is a lukewarm favorite. Her trainer, Todd Fencher, was a little surprised that she was actually made the program favorite. But Joyful Cadence, I think, will be dangerous with her speed outside. Caribbean Caper, if she came back to herself, she would be tough. Club Car, I think, is going to get a sneaky ride from IRAD, so I went with her over Slammed.
Club Car, she's 6 years old. It feels like she's 14. It feels like she's been forever.
They really tried to get KK and Mike Ball to run her in the Breeders' Cup last year. They only ran the Filly Mare Sprint with, what, 5? So they were ready to pull the trigger, and then they didn't. I'm sure they would like to see her run big tomorrow and run herself right into the Breeders' Cup.
Well, the Woodford, the Grade 2, starts out the stakes sequence, and Golden Pal is going to be a very, very short number, and we can understand that.
I mean, if he runs his race, he wins. I've got him over Artemis, City Limits, and Bad Beat Brian, one of my favorites from long ago, with Brian Michael, the son of the late Russ Michael, who was the owner for Ronnie Warren here 50 years ago, but he doesn't have any more now. It's in the barn of Brittany Vandenberg. But anyway, 4-7-2 for me with man, it's gonna be hard. It's gonna be harder to predict these mutuals anymore, Steve. I'll say 296. 296 on Golden Thousand is the win mutual. You know, we got that penny breakage here now.
Yes.
Today will be the first. It will really, I'm sure if you walk around the grandstand, what are these numbers? People will be unaware they've been doing it since the opening of Ellis Park in July. But yeah, today's going to be the first day at Keeneland for the penny breakage.
I love it. And then, Marty, quick glance ahead. I know you haven't done the selections yet, but I'm sure you've done a little bit of work on Sunday. The boys take over after the Jessamine gets the turf action started for the two-year-olds. Very nice field for the Bourbon and, of course, the Spinster as well. Quick glance for the Sunday action.
Well, I think Malathata, she'll be about 4-5 against the Truska. I talked to Fausto, caught him this morning on the apron. And, you know, I think he's got his fingers crossed she's going to come back to herself. I just can't see it. You know, that division, she's kind of getting swamped now with Malathata and Ness from Pletcher. And then you've got Search Results, who's been running good for Chad. And then also, of course, Clarier for Steve Asmussen. So it looks like she's kind of, you know, she's becoming second tier in this division, and you have Phil Bauer's resurgence, played hard up and coming. She's probably going to dog her a long way, take over, and then Malathot wins it. But I've got that. I've got in the bourbon. I have and the winner is and the winner is, and then Cagliostro in the inscrutable Indian Summer, which is the seventh race here on Sunday. That's where Hermes has them picked.
Excellent, Marty. And before we go, because we always utilize the DRF division correspondence, you're doing the filly and mare turf, and usually what the juvenile fillies, I think.
Yeah, you know, I thought I did about 4 hours work on the filly mare sprint because I've had it for what 10 or 12 years, and lo and behold, I misread my assignment. I have the filly mare turf this year because we juggled some things around with, you know, in Jay's absence.
Yes,
but,
yes.
I think the results of the Prix de l'Opera will weigh heavily on the complexion of the field, or at least the favorites. We have the second and third finishers out there. I don't have it in front of me, but they're both supposed to come. The winner is a maybe. That's why we didn't rank her in the top 10, but we have her. What's her name there, Steve, if you've got it in front of you? But it looks like those are the ones. We got two of the key races, the technical analysis and in Italian. The way they run here Saturday will go a long way in determining whether or not Chad decides to stretch it out from the mile to the mile and 3/16. You know, the distance varies every year of the filly and mare turf depending on the layout of the course where it's being held. So with the mile and 16th circumference here of the main track, they can run a mile and 3/16 on the turf around the two turns. So that's what it's going to be. Anyway, that looks like a really good race, and then I've got the juvenile fillies, which really both the results of the Alcibiades here and the Chandelier later tomorrow will go a long way in determining who is the favorite there. But in the meantime, we have the Frisette winner as a tepid favorite right now.
Yeah, Place de Carousel was the Prix d'Opera winner. And Marty, outstanding. I appreciate it. We will check in next week.
Sounds good, buddy. Thank you.
DRF McGee, everybody. There it is. There's your division glance. And as we wait for Brad Free, who does the prices for the Saturday races, he's got Nashua at 5-2, who was second in that Prix d'Opera. And as Marty mentioned, above the curve, third for Joseph O'Brien, 4-1. Dream Loper. Coming out of the Prix du Moulin, 5-1. Technical analysis for Chad, 6-1. Pearls Galore, last seen at Leopardstown, in the Matron, 8-1. In Italian for Chad, 10-1. Ross Carberry, out of the Irish St. Leger, 12-1. Virginia Joy, 15-1. Going Global. Phil D'Amato out of the maybe, 20-1, and Going to Vegas for D'Amato out of the maybe, second and third respectively. And then some other considerations, Adventuring, Family Way, Fluffy Socks, who is running at Santa Anita. And in fact, we're going to talk here presently to Brad Free about the Santa Anita action. So let me, in fact, reach for the Santa Anita action. There we go. All right. Some other considerations. Mise en scène, Plum Alley, and Saffron Beach. There you go. And Family Way. Let's see. That Saturday race, by the way. What? Let me see. Fluffy Socks in the Rodeo Drive, right? Yeah, Rodeo Drive. There you go. With Going to Vegas and Neige Blanche and Family Way. So, as mentioned, there's the major influence on the way the filly and mare turf will shape up. Speaking of Brad Free, and if you haven't checked the selections grid for Santa Anita, Brad is hitting at about 47%. Well, there he is, Brad. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, I wish it could last that way all year long. It'd be awesome. But off to a relatively formful beginning at the Santa Anita fall meet, and hopefully some of these prep races, Breeders' Cup prep races this weekend, have a little bit more significance than what we saw last weekend. Some good racing, some exciting racing, but in terms of Breeders' Cup relevance, other than CeCe, there's just really nothing happened last weekend that would suggest that we saw a Breeders' Cup winner at Santa Anita last weekend. We have some good two-year-old races on Saturday at Santa Anita, the American Pharoah for colts and the Chandelier for fillies. Maybe one of those two races, maybe both of them, will produce a Breeders' Cup contender. But not much really to get enthused about from last weekend's stakes results.
Well, and I'll quickly touch on one or two things, because we did have conversations with Mike Pigram and with Mark Glatt. I was very happy for Glatt. How Beatts win in the sprint, and what makes Sammy run at a nice number under Joe Bravo down the hill. And with Pegram, the gambit paid off with Speedboat Beach. And, of course, we're going to talk momentarily about a hat full of Baffert contenders in the American Pharoah. But you're right. I mean, it was kind of an interesting set of results, including Defunded, you know, who's been a nice horse. But it really felt like nobody showed up in there in the Awesome again, Brad.
Yeah, it was kind of a weird race, you know, and even immediately afterward, Defunded raced Gate to Wire. He's a good horse. His Del Mar summer was a disaster he just did not handle the paddock down there. He completely unraveled and was washed out and did not fire in either of his starts. Back home at Santa Anita, he took the lead and he was long gone. Country Grammar kind of chugged along late for second, and immediately after the race, Baffert really downplayed the idea of running either one of those horses in the Breeders' Cup Classic. Defunded, he cold-watered that idea. Country Grammar, Baffert suggested that he was a tired horse, and all he's done this year is win more than $10 million. And, you know, I'll be surprised if Defunded and or Country Grammar show up in the Breeders' Cup Classic. There are other races out there other than the Breeders' Cup Classic for horses like Defunded and Country Grammar, and I'm sure that Baffert would love to go back to the Middle East with Country Grammar next year, assuming he stays in training. As far as the two Glatt sprinters, that was pretty cool. I mean, Glatt's just he's an easy guy to root for. Howbeit, won the Santa Anita sprint. He's not going to the Breeders' Cup. He's not eligible. But as of early this week, What Makes Sammy Run, the winner of the Eddie D, it was still under consideration for the turf sprint at Keeneland, and that would be, you know, I don't know if he's good enough. I don't know if any of them are good enough, but he ran well, what Makes Sammy Run did, and as of this week, early this week, he looks like the right, or a contender in that spot. And regarding the two-year-old Speedboat Beach, as dazzling as he was in his career debut at Del Mar, you know, I mean, watching the Speakeasy, he did what he had to do at odds of 2-5, I don't know if it was his unfamiliarity with the grass footing or what, but he was not nearly as impressive on grass as he was on dirt. He had never stepped foot on grass before, Speedboat Beach. So, you know, I guess he had a right to maybe regress a little bit off that 104 buyer debut. But watching the Speakeasy, you wouldn't look at that race and go, wow, there's the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint winner. He's 2-for-2. I'm not knocking him. I'm just saying that his dirt race was more impressive than his dirt race. The other races, Midnight Memories ran the slowest mile of 16th of the Zenyatta Stakes ever. I doubt that she would be going back to take on the likes of Nest and Malathot. As for the other stakes winners, Beyond Brilliant, no decision has been made. He wired the field in the City of Hope Mile, and Master of Foxhounds, he won the John Henry, kind of a lackluster group of grass horses out here in California. So we do have some excitement to look forward to Saturday afternoon at Santa Anita. Some very good two-year-olds will be showing up in the American Pharoah and the Chandelier.
You know, Brad, since, in fact, you mentioned Midnight Memories in the Zenyatta. You are, of course, handling the distaff in terms of the division coverage and do all of Saturday's morning lines in the pages of the Daily Racing Form. Let me get quickly the rest of your overview, because I know Nest you've got at the top, 5-2, Malathat 3-1, and then it kind of falls into a lot of the usual suspects.
Yeah, they're usual suspects, but some very good suspects.
Yes.
You know, at this stage with Nest and Malathat both scheduled to run this weekend, Nest in the Beldame at Aqueduct and Spinster, or Malathat in the Spinster at Keeneland, I'm just trying not to embarrass myself and make these horses too low or too high. 5-2 and 3-1 is kind of a, you know, it's kind of a middle-of-the-road type of favoritism situation. Search Results trains into the Breeders' Cup, so does Clairiere. The horse that I think I may have gooped on, or maybe it's just me falling in love with her, is a Society, who I have listed at odds of 5-1, and I don't think she's going to be 8-1. 8-1 is the price I have her listed at, and off back-to-back 100 buyer speed figures, including a romping victory in the Cotillion, I would suspect that her odds are going to drop a little bit, and I'm going to try to go a little bit shorter for next Friday's edition. This filly is really good. She's a gun runner 3-year-old. She's light on seasoning. She's unlike some other Steve Asmussen and trainees who have gone through the Cotillion. I talked to Asmussen early this week and, you know, tried to get him to compare, you know, Society to some of his other Cotillion starters, and you know, he won the Breeders' Cup Distaff, I think it was 2014, with Untappable. At this stage of the year, Untappable had already established herself as a top class filly. She won the Kentucky Oaks that spring. But the comparison that Asmussen made with regards to Society and the previous Cotillion winner was My Miss Aurelia. And it really made sense, because My Miss Aurelia was very lightly raced going into the fall of her 3-year-old campaign. She won the Cotillion, and then she came right back and reproduced the effort, finishing second in the Breeders' Cup Distaff. And it's kind of a very similar situation this fall, because Society, she really has yet to prove herself against the top company. I know the Cotillion was a grade one and she won in a romp, but against the likes that she will be facing in the Distaff, she's yet untested. So it'll be very interesting to see how the complexion of this race looks when we get a little bit closer. But Society is a filly that I would love to lock in 8-1. It's not going to happen. Her odds are going to be shorter. And then, of course, we'll wait and see what happens this weekend in the Beldame and the Spinster.
Yeah, it's so funny. I knew the minute you started to angle toward a mispricing, I said he's going to say Society. And she, you know, it's funny, because I said to Steve Asmussen last week, I said, how is it? He actually has got two horses that have been fabulous all year that are kind of under the radar, impossibly, Gunite and Society. And I said, Steve, how is this filly? How did she go off at 8-1, first of all, on last Saturday? And how are they not getting more, you know, more love? And Steve said, that's all right. They made their cases known here in their most recent starts. And that it's so funny. I agree, and is going to be from a price standpoint at least a alternative to Malathat and Nest. And listen, Nest, as good as Nest has been, the case could be made that she's sort of the country grammar of 3-year-old fillies, a horse that really wants a classic trip.
Yeah, you could make that case. However, reading some of the quotes from trainer Todd Pletcher, I mean, he just raves about her condition and how well she's doing. And, yeah, she wants to run a long ways. In fact, you know, there was some discussion among observers earlier this year that maybe Ness would show up in the Breeders' Cup Classic. That would not have been a completely outlandish idea. But Pletcher's doing the, you know, he's doing the right thing. He's running her in the division that she fits best in. They're going a mile and 1/8 at Keeneland, and I don't really think that that's going to be a detriment to her. She won the Coaching Club American Oaks going a mile and 1/8 by more than 12 lengths. It And so, you know, I think she's special, and that's really not giving away any secrets. She's won 6 out of 9. I think she was best in the Kentucky Oaks. She ran super in the Belmont Stakes. She's reproduced her form and held her form and her condition going into fall. And she's the type of favorite that, you know, enters with only one significant knock, and that is her price. She's running against some very good fast fillies, including Society, and she's going to be at 5-2 right now, 4 weeks out. That seems a little bit on the low side for a filly who's going up against, you know, a very, very good, solid, outstanding group.
Brad Free handling the distaff in the Daily Racing Form among the divisions. We'll talk to Marcus Hirsch and Dave Grenig yet this morning as well and touch on theirs. And, of course, Marty gave us a couple of snapshots looking into Breeders' Cup Crystal Ball. Brad will revisit that in coming weeks. Let's talk about tomorrow at Santa Anita and a little bit about Sunday. The Rodeo Drive, the first of the major stakes tomorrow at the Great Race Place. And this division has been certainly a target of East Coast and Mid-America trainers, Brendan Walsh, Graham Motion, Chad Brown, frequently sending invaders, and sort of feels like Chad and Brendan have got major players, if not the likely types, coming in here.
Well, the female grass division in California has been relatively shallow for a number of years. And this is a win-and-you're-in for the Breeders' Cup Filly Mare Turf. All three graded stakes races on Saturday are win-and-you're-ins. You know, it's funny. I agree with what you just said. This is a division that is ripe for horses, good top-class horses, shipping in from the East and Midwest. And yet, the Rodeo Drive, the last time it was won by a shipper was 2015. Which surprised me. I thought, you know, I looked through the media guide and expected to see, you know, every single Rodeo Drive winner be a shipper from the East Coast or Midwest. No, it hasn't really happened. Avenge won it in two, locally based Avenge won it two straight years, 16-17. Basilica, Mirth, Mucho Unusual, and going to Vegas last year. So I was surprised as I think you are, Steve, that this race has not been dominated by shippers in recent years. I expect that to change on Saturday. With all due respect to Going to Vegas, who wired the field last year in this very race and could get the same trip this year in a race with no speed, I think that Family Way for Brendan Walsh and also Fluffy Socks for trainer Jeb Brown are the two most likely to upset the locals. Family Way has enough tactical speed to keep Going to Vegas in her sights, and I think she's going to get first run into the lane, and I think she'll win if she can hold off the rally of Fluffy Socks, who's the 2-1 favorite on the morning line and has the highest speed figure going into the race, a runner-up finish last time out behind Technical Analysis. They're both good, they're both sharp, they're both in good form, Family Way and Fluffy Socks, and I think that they are the most probable winners. I don't know about relevance to the Breeders' Cup Filly Mare Turf. This race, the Rodeo Drive, has not been productive in terms of Breeders' Cup success. Since 2010, 11 Rodeo Drive winners have contested the Breeders' Cup Filly Mare Turf. One of them ran second. That was Marketing Mix back in 2012. And another ran third. That was Avenge in 2016. It's just not a race that produces top Breeders' Cup Filly Mare Turf winners. And this bettors have recognized this because most of the Rodeo Drive winners go off at giant prices, double-digit odds in the Breeders' Cup. So when it comes to the strength of the Filly Mare Turf division, it's probably going to be either a European or a filly trained by Chad Brown. And the top three choices on Daily Racing Form's early line are all Europeans, Nashua, Above the Curve, and Dreamloper. But as far as the Rodeo Drive, I like Family Way to win it over Fluffy Socks in a race that really doesn't have a whole lot of intrigue with regards to wagering possibilities.
Well, there might be some intrigue, though, if we talk about the Grade 2 Chandelier. And seven fillies are going to go postward, and there's a couple of interesting price considerations, at least for me, Brad. And I don't know where you went in this, so I'll just turn it over to you, and I'll come back with my crazy idea.
Yeah, no, I went very predictable here as far as most likely winner, and it's the filly who, in my opinion, was the most impressive maiden winner of the Del Mar Summer Meet, and that was Justique. Her debut was just spectacular. I know she didn't break any speed records. She got a 72 buyer speed figure first time out, but watching the tape of her race, it was amazing. She did not have any speed at all because Sheriff does not ask his horses. Horse trainer John Sheriff does not ask horses for speed in the morning. He's a lot more concerned, he and jockey Victor Espinosa, with how they come out of the gate, coming out of the gate straight. They don't really, aren't focused on, you know, these 34 flat gate workouts. They just want the horse to run, come out of the gate well and run well. Well, Justique did more than just run well. She picked up steam into the turn. She lengthened her stride. She sliced through horses, angled out, blew right past the A-setters, and won under a hold. It was really a scintillating maiden victory. Not that fast, but visually impressive. She was supposed to run in the Del Mar Debutante, but she got sick. She missed some training. And so Sheriff said, well, let's just regroup and we'll point for the Chandelier. Here we are on top of the Chandelier, and Justique has trained well. I think she's a special filly. But from a skeptical handicapping horse playing perspective, she is not the type of filly that I would be interested in backing at a short price. I'm talking just about from a sporting perspective and from a fan perspective. I think that she is just going to be turn out to be a very fun filly to watch develop through her career. Now you go back to the 1-2 finishers in the Del Mar Debutante. Well, they didn't go fast either. And Tell Me No Lies and Home Cooking, it was the lowest rated debutante in history. A 71 buyer speed figure. Home Cooking had a 3-length lead at the eighth pole, and then she ran her final furlong in 13-2, and Tell Me No Lies came and got her. It was a low-rated, slow race. And Tell Me No Lies ran better than the number. She did not have a great trip. She was in traffic. She had to wait. She angled out. She ran a lot better than Home Cooking, a lot better than the head margin. But there are plenty of questions in this race, and so I got a couple price horses as well in here. One of them is the third-place finisher from the debutante, Ice Dancing. Her first start was a third-place finish against Maidens, and it was just a give-me prep race. They took her back, they allowed her to finish, and she ran well in what was only an educational run. Second time out, trainer Dick Mandela told Flavian Pratt, let her run out of there a little bit. She has a race under her belt. Let her run out of there a little bit, be forwardly placed, and she'll give it to you. Well, she didn't give it to Pratt late because they were flying early, 22, 44, and 1, and Ice Dancing was within striking range of that hot pace, and Mandela believes that that kind of took the starch out of Ice Dancing's stretch run. They're not going to be going 44 in the two-turn Chandelier on Saturday. Ice Dancing should be able to fall into a pressing-type trip up close to a 46 and change. She should be, get into a nice, easy, comfortable stride, and I think the two turns might be what she wants to do. That's 10-1 on the morning line for Ice Dancing, a maiden making her third start. The other one, and this one is completely crazy, number one, Naughty Naughty.
Yep.
There you go. I mean, if you just identify the fastest thoroughgraph number in this field, that was Naughty Lottie, who got a 7.25 in her debut at Louisiana Downs. Now, I'm not sure what happened to her last time. She was forwardly placed, and then she finished third by 10. But the second and fourth place finishers from the Prairie Meadows Debutante did come back to win their next start. Naughty Lottie is probably outclassed, shipping from the Midwest into California, but at 12-1 against a juvenile filly division in California that has so far left a lot to be desired, I would not talk anyone off of Naughty Lottie as the longest shot on the morning line at odds of 12-1, and we'll find out how good she is. When you're backing a double-digit, runner, everything's not going to be perfect. You have to overlook some potential imperfections, and maybe Naughty Lottie is not good enough against these California fillies. But at the price, she is at least worth considering.
I completely agree, and that number jumped off the page in me. And Justin Janson knows, you know, what to do with a good horse. It's not this is not like you know, completely insane. That I thought there was something there, and I won't be surprised. They're certainly going to be on my tickets with Justique and some of the other obvious players like Home Cooking, but. I agree about Naughty Lottie. Let's talk about the boys' race. The American Pharoah goes off at 7:30 Saturday night, and obviously Baffert has got this race kind of surrounded, and Cave Rock will be the point of discussion, and we talked with Mike Pegram about him last week, or actually was it, no, on Monday, I'm losing track of days, but the previous week we talked with Gary Young about Hijazi, and here's Hijazi, a 100 buyer in his second start, and not good enough to break the maiden. It seems like Hijazi and Cave Rock mix it up, I think, you know, in this American Pharoah.
No doubt about it. These are two of the top two-year-old colts in California. Cave Rock is 2-for-2, including a devastating win in the Del Mar Futurity, and Hijazi is a two-start maiden. It's crazy to think that a horse like Hijazi, a $3.5 million colt, who earned a 100 buyer in his second career start, has yet to win a race. This is a good horse. And, I mean, look, they're two-year-olds, and, you know, wins and losses really are not that important, and from at least my handicapping perspective, it's how they run, if they run fast, and Hijazi is a fast son of a gun. His first start was okay. He didn't have the greatest of trip. It was the debut. Who cares? Second time out, he hooked into Speedboat Beach, and Speedboat Beach just kept on running. Hijazi wants to go two turns. That's what Baffert believes. I think that's what Gary Young believes as well. And I think there's going to be a little bit less discrepancy in price than is reflected on the morning line. Cave Rock is 4-5, and Hijazi is 5-2. I wouldn't be surprised if they're a lot closer than that, maybe 6-5, 7-5. I think Hijazi is going to get a lot of support. I picked him on top. He's the fastest horse in the race on Thoroughgraph. He's the fastest horse in the race off Buyer Speed Figures last start anyway. And this is the spot for Hijazi, who probably does want to go two turns. Does Cave Rock want to go two turns? Who knows? He's by Arrogate, so that certainly gives him a license to stretch his speed. And when you win your debut by 6 and the Del Mar Futurity by more than 5, it would be foolish to try to knock this horse. Cave Rock is the speed of the field. He might be long gone, but Hijazi should be forwardly placed. I believe he wants to go two turns. He's my top choice. 5-2, I think he's going to be a little bit, I think he could be under 2-1, Hijazi, but you're right. Baffert has 4 in the field, but the top two are Hijazi and Cave Rock.
Brad Free with us, and Brad, this confrontation of Pegram, Watson, and Whiteman versus Zidane gets reprised on Sunday in the sixth race, a maiden heavyweight bout. Arabian Lion, the $600,000 Justify, versus Elwood Blues, the $380,000 Justify. They line up shoulder to shoulder. Look at these workouts that are paralleled and can be watched on XBTV. Unbelievable interest. I'm more interested in this race than I am in the stakes on Sunday.
Yeah, you and me both. This is not the first time, by the way, that Arabian Lion and Elwood Blues have met. They're both first-time
right.
starters. Yeah, but they know each other quite well in morning workouts. I've watched the workouts. I can't separate them. These are two good horses. I lean toward Arabian Lion without a whole lot of conviction, other than to say that I think both these two-year-old sons of Justify, and boy, is Justify off to a wild start as a stallion. His debut progeny are winning at a 29% clip, and Arabian Lion and Elwood Blues have worked in company. They have worked head-to-head. They're evenly matched, at least in the morning. I went toward Arabian Lion, but only because I got to lean towards somebody. These are two very promising young horses. One of them cost $600,000. The other one cost $380,000. They both have worked fast. They both have worked well. They're seasoned in the morning. And we're going to find out in the afternoon who the better colt is, at least for now, in early October at Santa Anita. And Arabian Lion and Elwood Blues, two very promising first-time starters. I picked him in that order.
Well, it's very interesting because from a pedigree standpoint, Arabian Lion may be a slight edge, but yet Elwood Blues, that dam, you remember Bling Is My Thing, right? Won the Wilshire, was grade one placed in the Gamely and the Buena Vista and the like. She was a nice horse, Bling Is My Thing.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, look, when you pay this much money for a horse, you're buying ability, and hopefully you're also buying some pedigree. And in the case of Elwood Blues, Bling Is My Thing, the mare, yeah, she was pretty darn good. And you know what she did first time out? It was in a mile grass race, so I don't really know if it applies to a 6 furlong dirt race. But Bling Is My Thing was 15-1. And she rallied from mid-pack and won by more than two lengths and paid $33. So if a horse is bred to win first time out, I guess it would be Elwood Blues. Again, that debut victory by the dam of Elwood Blues was a mile on grass. Elwood Blues is going 6 furlongs on dirt, but he's by Justify, whose progeny are showing plenty of speed. And, yeah, this colt has some pedigree power in his corner, no doubt.
Bling Is My Thing, Eric Kruljack.
Correct. That is correct, yeah. And she went on to have a very good career. She won the Grade 3 Wilshire. You know, she placed in a Grade 1. She won four races from 14 starts, made almost $300,000. Elwood Blues is her third foal to race. I'm just looking right now at DRF Formulator. Her first one, Smooth Over, was a mare who did nothing in two starts. Her second one was King Curlin, who he's still a maiden. He finished second in his debut, and then they threw him to the Wolves in the Breeders' Futurity, and that probably was the wrong move. He finished 12th, came back and lost a maiden race, and hasn't been seen since then. So it remains to be seen if Bling Is My Thing is as good a producer as she was a race mare, but based on what we've seen in the morning from Elwood Blues, I have to believe that she may have thrown a runner this time around.
Well, the two-year-old turf stakes as well on Sunday, the Zuma Beach and the Surfer Girl, Hammer's great legacy, the surfboard trophies, and both of these races should produce Breeders' Cup starters.
Well, I guess they could. They don't normally, however. I mean, they do produce starters. Do they produce contenders? That's a debate for another time. Comanche Country is 2-for-2 in the country. She's the likely favorite in the Surfer Girl, race number 5. You know, I don't know if I want to take a short price on her. I think there are two horses in this field that could go 20-1 or higher that I'm very interested in. I'm going to pick them 2-3 behind Comanche Country. One of them is a filly named Court Snort, who finished 5th in the juvenile turf at Del Mar, won by Comanche Country. She was 3 wide every step of the way. She actually finished very well, rallying from behind, 5th by 4 lengths. She has improved every single start. She was 34-1 in the Del Mar juvenile turf. I would expect her odds to be somewhere in that ballpark again. And she's the type of filly that I think could slip through the cracks. I'm talking about Court Snort. The other one, it requires a little bit more imagination or foolishness, perhaps, and that's the filly to her inside, Bolts Broad. Here's why I like her, why I give her a shot anyway. She's by Bolt Doro, whose progeny have been doing okay in limited starts on grass, but Bolts Broad is a sibling to a couple of turf performers who moved up when they switched surfaces. Bolts Broad was actually intended to run on grass last time out. She prepped in a sprint on turf, ran around the track, finished 7th. Second time out, trainer Shelby Ruiz put her in a grass race at Del Mar, a grass route, and the race got taken off of the grass and moved to the main track, and Bolts Broad won anyway. She earned a whopping 50 buyer. She's not fast at all, but I believe that she has the potential to improve on grass. her odds should be somewhere in the 30-1 ballpark. And I'm going to fool around with those two crazy horses, recognizing Comanche Country is the right favorite. But Court Snort and Bolts Broad, they're both going to be gigantic prices, and I will be involved.
Brad Free, everybody. Brad Free won on your Twitter and in the pages of the Daily Racing Form. Brad, good weekend of racing, obviously. Eyes particularly on the two-year-olds of both sexes. I appreciate it, and we'll catch up next week.
Sounds good. Good luck, everyone.
Brad Free, folks. Let's take our only break of the morning, and then Marcus Hirsch is going to join us. Marcus and Schaap and Scully, Dave Grenig at the top of hour three. We'll get to Ron Gierkink as well, speaking of the racing form. Gus is going to join us, Alonzo, and more. We'll also be watching out for the scratches from New York. Hour two, or let's call it the second half, because I think it'll be our only break of the morning. When we come back, and as we go, that's all right, Case, you can play us out. Let me mention, let's see, let me get a couple of quick licks in here, and Casey and I both have something that needs to get done here on the break. Charlestown, again, a reminder, you got the West Virginia Breeders' Classics. Starts at 7 o'clock Eastern tomorrow night. All stakes, the whole card, 10 races. There was also, I should slip in, let me go over here, and I did mention that yesterday,